My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF. Because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
And welcome to another edition of Abolitionist Abstractions. As always, we're covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments and the agents thereof. You can find out more information about this at BIPCOT.org. So I am back, and I think I tipped people off a little bit last week, but if I didn't, I have a special guest with me this week. A lot of my listeners may know him. He runs a little podcast called Peaceful Anarchism, and once upon a time, he used to be my co-host on the Seeds of Liberty, Mr. Danilo Cuellar. What's up, buddy? How you doing?
Hey, Jeremy. Glad to be back with you. I've been busy with my podcast and, you know, with my kids, homeschooling them and trying to stay active online and trying to post as much as possible. And it gets a little difficult, but, you know, one does what one can. So
yes. Well, the fact that you're working on the unschool, homeschool thing with your kids is actually part of the reason that you're here, other than the fact that I haven't talked to you in forever in a long form setting. So, you know, I wanted to sit you down and actually have a chat. But yeah, we were gonna talk some parenting stuff tonight. And before we get into that, I do want to mention for those listening, I forgot to mention this during last week's episode. Last week was brought to you by Discord, which is why we had some issues with my guest. This week, if there's any problems, we're going to blame it on Skype because, well, Danilo's back, and we've always had issues with Danilo in audio. So we ended up having to use Skype tonight because Dave set up our Discord server. I don't know what the hell he did. Something's going on there that we couldn't actually connect. So if there's any issues, it sounded all right beforehand, but just in case, I want to get that out of the way. Anyway, so you're here. We're going to talk some parenting stuff, I guess. And I don't know. I think this all started. I mean, obviously, you talk or have at least in the past talked a lot about these things about, you know, peaceful parenting and stuff like that. We did a bunch of Seeds episodes on them back in the day. I know you talk about it a fair amount on your show and in your writings. And then, of course, you are doing the homeschooling, unschooling thing with your children currently, which I am trying to do too. But I think we started talking about doing this episode when I first presented you the piece that I wrote on the parenting piece that I wrote that I finally published a couple of weeks ago, because you were one of the only people that had read it before I actually put it out there. And so after going through that and, you know, helping me tighten that up and stuff, we were talking about it. I was like, yeah, we should talk parenting because I put that out there. It didn't get as much traction on Steam as I was hoping it would, but now it's out there on the Seeds of Liberty site and it's starting to get more views. So hopefully there'll be more of a discussion about it. But in general,
you mean the Contradictions Abound article, right?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. My Contradictions Abound article, which I will again attach in the show links, the show notes rather. So anybody who hasn't read that can check it out. But yeah. So, I mean, obviously I think you and I share a kind of similar view on the whole parent, at least on when it comes to the schooling aspect of parenting, because I'm trying to do the same thing with my girls. although we've been all over the place because, you know, we're trying to move and stuff like that. So it's kind of hard to get set up with groups and be like, oh, yeah, we're going to hang out for like a week or two and then we're going to leave.
Yeah.
So we're hoping once we relocate. But so how I know you are one of the few, at least that I know of, unschooling, homeschooling dads, you know, which is something I'm trying to get myself into. And hopefully that will finally come to fruition when we move out of here, because the plan is for Jen to get a job and me to get to stay home for a while. So what's that like now? You've been doing that for a couple of years now. How's that going?
Yeah, I am certainly enjoying it. It's now since June of 2014 that I've been doing it. So now about...
Wow, almost 4 years now.
Almost 4 years, yeah. I mean, I do, you know, earn some income on the side with doing some acupuncture, Chinese herbs, and recently I've been acquiring some chess students, which is pretty cool and very convenient because I can teach chess online, and so, you know, they pay me PayPal, and yeah, and it's very convenient, you know. I just take an hour, teach a chess lesson for an hour, and make some money. So I'm very happy with that. So I'm trying to really push to do more of that because, yeah, with the acupuncture, I got to travel to the, you know, go to their house, and it's just, it's a big ordeal. You know, the herbs are a little bit different. I can call them and talk to them over the phone. So, yeah, I can do that. But yeah, the kids are doing pretty good. My daughter is in gymnastics, and she's really loving it. She's actually quite advanced for her age. She is, they noticed that she is very, has strong, like, upper body strength. And so they moved her into a more, into a smaller group of more advanced kids. And so she gets like more personalized attention, and she's like preparing for like a performance, I guess, in June. So yeah, that's pretty cool. And she does get a lot of comments from people saying, like, when they can see what she can do, like, she can do the monkey bars, but like, she's tiny. She's 5 years old. She's tiny for a 5 year old, but she's strong and she can do the monkey bars by herself. She's been able to do that, I don't know, for a few months or a year. And like, everybody's always blown away when they see her do all the monkey bars, like a whole row of them by herself. And, yeah. She's wow. Strong. That's pretty cool. So yeah, she's definitely into that and the ballet. She took a little break, but now she's back in the ballet and tap. So she loves both of those. And then my son, he's been getting very much into chess. I've gotten much more into chess lately since last summer. I started a chess club locally in Nyack around here in Rockland County. And I love it. You know, it's great. And we have a time 5:30 to 7 where it's just for kids. And so my kids can play other kids. So that's really, we get like 10 to 15 kids. So it's really
wow,
a good amount of kids. And then from 7 to 9, it's for adults. And so, yeah, so that's really awesome. Every week that he can meet other kids and play chess. And then we have, he has an account on this website, chesskid.com. And so he has an account there, watches, like, you know, animated fun tutorial videos about chess, and they make it really interesting and engaging. And then he can play other kids online, which is pretty cool. So he enjoys that a lot. And I teach him as well. So, you know, and this is the other thing regarding homeschool or regarding more unschooling is that it's, you know, people think, oh, I'm a chess player, so I must be teaching my kids chess. But it didn't really happen that way. I didn't like intend on teaching him, like, sitting him down and saying, you're going to learn chess right now. No, it wasn't like that. It's just that everywhere that we went, like to a playground or a park, I would always bring my chess set, my chess book, and I open it up and just, you know, go through a game and analyze stuff. And my kids would just see me all the time, just playing chess all the time. And they just picked up the game, the rules. It's pretty simple. And they love it now. And they play each other. And they play other kids at the park, you know, when the weather's nice and warm. So it's a great, way to meet, you know, other kids. Yeah, so it's not like I, you know, forced him to learn chess. this is where you're going to learn. You're going to study the classics and learn the grandmasters and learn all the world champions by name. No.
Oh yeah, sure. Like the parents who want to make sure their children are cultured and force them to do, like, say something like learn the violin at a very young age. And even if it's something the child may have wanted to do at a certain point and may have had interest in, when it's forced upon them like that, more often than not, it ends up being a turnoff for the child, and that because they see it as work rather as something they want to do. But that, I mean, it's interesting because I was listening to you say that, and I remember years ago you talking about the fact that, you know, because two of your great loves are chess and the piano.
Mm.
And you had always said that those are two things you would love your kids to get into, but you never wanted, you would say, I mean, like I said, 3-4 years ago when we used to talk about this, you would say that you never wanted to force them into it. But up until, you know, the last couple of times I spoke to you, I guess, it hadn't really clicked with either of them. And I remember you kind of like, not like being upset, but kind of like being a little bummed, be like, I wish they would, but all you did was continue to persevere, not by pushing them, but just doing it in front of them so that they ended up coming to you. And the other thing that I picked up on what you were saying was, it was very interesting, not necessarily to me, but I think to anybody who would listen to this and who has a mindset of, like, the, you know, the traditional type schooling and even maybe homeschooling, but like the very traditional type homeschooling. Mm-hmm. When you're asked the question, oh, so what are you up to in the homeschooling, unschooling game with your kids? Instead of going to, like, what they're learning as far as subjects and how they're doing in math, you immediately went to the classes that they're taking, and not only that they're taking, that they've chosen to take and learn about themselves, which I, of course, find awesome, because that's the type of, I would like to think that'd be my answer too, if somebody posed that to me, because, you know, we don't really, here at my house, we don't really focus necessarily on subjects per se. I mean, Jen works with them a lot and has been with, you know, with their writing and, you know, their letters and their numbers and stuff like that. But we also didn't push them. And, you know, we got a lot of nasty looks and comments from family members and so-called friends and whatever about the fact that, you know, when they were five and they weren't even reading yet or even trying to read yet. And it's like, well, because they don't want to. Like, it's not like we've hidden the ability to read from them, and we've said, no, we're not going to teach you, ha ha ha. We are like the Catholic Church back in the day, and only the special people can read the documents, and you will never get. No, it was nothing like that. You know, we tried. We said, hey, would you like to learn how to spell these words so you can read these books? And, no, we'd rather let you read the books to us. Okay. So we didn't push them. And, you know, when a couple times we got frustrated with it, we thought we should be pushing a little bit more, and then we decided against it. And then finally, like a couple of months later, you know, one of our daughters, Harley, came to us and was kind of went to Jen and was like, I want to learn my words, you know, all on her own. And it was like, all right, great. Now we'll work on that, you know. And when they want to work on it, we work on it, and we try, like, you know, throw it out there. But I love that attitude, the fact that that's the response, you know, like I said, instead of going right to, oh yes, they've got their word, you know, their letters down, and they could do basic math. No, your son's out there playing chess and your daughter's out there doing gymnastics, and those are the first two things you mentioned. I think that's so great. I think that's, you know, that's one of the things that originally drew me to the unschooling world, was that freedom that you're giving the kids. And really, you know, that's why, I mean, I think you agree with me too, that I, you know, I'm a big fan of the term self-directed learning.
Oh yeah.
You know,
definitely. Yeah. And there's an immense difference between my son and my daughter in terms of the reading. My son, he's much less, I guess maybe he just doesn't care. He doesn't care if he doesn't know how to read. I mean, actually, this is not just about reading. It's about so many things. My daughter is just so focused, and when she wants to determine, when she wants to learn something, she learns it very quick. Like, she learned to write her name before my son learns to write her name, and he's 2 years older. You know? Isn't it amazing? And so she is
Having hung out with your kids, I could totally see that.
I know. And, like, she can – she's five, right? She can cut up an apple – or pair herself, like, into little pieces. And my son doesn't do that at all. And he, like, wants, you know, can I have some of you? Like, she's so independent. It's amazing. She just had her first sleepover last week, and she loved it. And she's five. I'm like, wait, is this the age that it starts? Nope, here. My son, seven, nope, not even considering it. He's like, nope, sorry, I will not do that. But my son has recently gained a much greater incentive to want to learn how to read because of Minecraft. I don't know. Are you kids into Minecraft at all?
No, they actually, they don't, you know, I tried to get them into like just video games in general like a year or two ago because I still have a PlayStation 3 and I, you know, I tried to find some like kid-centered games for them to play and stuff like that. And they liked the pretty colors and they liked what was going on in the screen, but they really had no interest. Like they kind of got into it because I also have the PlayStation Move, which is kind of like the Nintendo Wii. So you can you have to hold sticks in your hand and you can play and stuff. They got into that for a little while, but then they're like, we're done with that. But I recently dug out Jen found an old video game system that somebody had given us years ago that was still sitting in the garage, and we plugged that in, and they thought that was the greatest thing in the world. But no, they haven't gotten as far as Minecraft yet.
Yeah, so my son, I guess he was a little – I had this Sega Genesis, this old, you know, classic Sega Genesis collection game thing, and he loves that, especially Sonic. He's been playing that. But ever since he found Minecraft, he's completely abandoned that. Now he's all about Minecraft and learning about it, and he watches YouTube videos about it, tutorials. He loves watching other people play. He actually wants to start his own YouTube channel, Minecraft playing YouTube channel. It's kind of funny.
That's awesome.
Because you find so many people who are doing it. So what's awesome about Minecraft is that, first of all, it's creative and it's imaginative. He builds things, and if he doesn't know how to build it, he searches on YouTube how to do it and learns how to build it and then does it. And in the beginning, he was kind of scared to play with other people. He didn't want to play. He just wanted to play by himself, you know, not online. But recently, maybe like a week ago, He gained the courage to want to play with other people, and now he's playing with other people, and he loves it. It's kind of funny because he would tell me, he's like, Daddy, somebody just killed me, and it sucks because he would like get you know that you dig up stuff, you get iron, and you get diamonds, and then you can make a diamond sword, and that's like the highest, the strongest sword. But the problem is when somebody kills you, they can get your stuff.
Oh,
it's so like I had a diamond sword, and he killed me. So it's kind of funny. So the reason that that reading is now very much incentivizing him is because of Minecraft, because he sees people talking in the chat box. He keeps coming up to me. What does it say? What does it say?
What are they saying to each other, Dad?
Yeah. And so he's really wants to learn, and I'm like I think that's such a great, you know, fire in the behind that he's gonna learn so much quicker because he wants to figure out what are these people saying. And you know, when he's like they open chests and they have little items in the chest and you can acquire them. He doesn't know what each of them says, so he keeps asking me about that. So all these things is a great incentive for just him to want to learn how to read, you know? And so, yeah, he is. And my wife loves that because for her, that was one of the big things that she was kind of irritated by, was that his indifference in terms of reading. He just didn't care about reading. But now he has a reason to want to read. And so it's great. So I think, it served a wonderful purpose, Minecraft.
Well, no, and you're actually not the first person I've heard that from. Like, actually, the explanation you gave about what you kind of do with it is probably more than I knew about Minecraft. Like, I've heard the name a bunch of times, and I know people talk about it, but I've never, like, even seen a screen of it being played. I've never paid attention that much. But I've actually listened to a lot of the people who are trying to run their own little private unschooling homeschooling groups across the country, especially when they've been on the School Sucks Project with Brett Vanat. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's had a lot of people on recently, especially during his tour across the country where he stopped at a bunch of these different little schools and stuff. And Minecraft comes up a lot of times.
Mm.
I hear it mentioned as something that the kids, you know, from ages 4 till, you know, 12, whatever, all getting into, and kind of type of this, some of the similar things. Like, it actually drives them to want to know more about other things. And again, you don't have to push them at all. And I love that type of approach too, because that's the same type of thing that we did originally. Like I said, when we started out, we would try to bring the information to the girls, and if they kind of pushed back really hard, then we let it go. But like, for instance, with numbers, I used to do it, and Jen still does it too. You know, when they come out shopping with us all the time, like we do math, like we learn numbers and math by talking about stuff in the aisles, like how much everything costs, and then when we go up to pay, like how much we're giving and how much change we receive. And it's all those basic little everyday interactions that most people take for granted, but they don't realize that they're just learning experience. And especially if it ends up, you know, because when it came to stuff like that, then when they started to get old enough that they started to understand that we couldn't just hand them every toy they wanted, like it costs money. Like we're starting, they're starting to understand that concept. So now it was like, now they wanted to know even more about these numbers because they wanted to know how much things cost and how much they have in their little piggy bank and if they can buy it themselves or if they have to wait and type of stuff. And, you know, for the reading thing, that was kind of, you know, like I said, at one point, Jen especially was getting a little frustrated because she was hoping they would kind of pick up on it, but weren't. And I think she was, you know, wondering whether we should abandon this approach sooner than I was. And it was the other interesting thing about that too is a lot of people expected me to be upset, like family members and stuff expected me to be upset that my kids weren't reading by a certain point because I was considered like, you know, the family prodigy or whatever. And my parents, who were both public school teachers, to this day still cannot explain how or why this happened. But I started reading at an extremely advanced level on my own without them showing me anything by the age of four. So by the time, the time I hit kindergarten, I was leagues ahead of my friends.
Wow.
And like my parents to this day, like we've talked about, like my dad and I talked about this sometime last year. And he's like, I still don't understand it. He's like, I have no idea how you did it. He's like, we weren't teaching you. We weren't showing you. He's like, you just decided you wanted to learn to read and you figured it out on your own. But you know, I wasn't upset because I took, you know, with my kids, cause I was like, they're not ready yet. I don't remember myself being four and teaching me these things, but I can only assume that very much like my children or like your son, as you were describing, had something that was like, oh my God, I need to be able to do this because I want to do this. And a lot of times it's as simple as that. All of a sudden, I don't care about reading. I don't care about reading. Ooh, there's this cool thing I could do. Oh, I need to be able to read. Okay. You know, with my daughters, the couple of times that I did try to give them like help and try to like give them things that they would be interested in. They both love superheroes. They're huge into the Marvel and DC, but more specifically Marvel. They actually, now they're both watching them, but for a while, my one daughter was actually petrified of them and the other one wanted to watch all like the Avengers movies with me.
The movies?
Oh yeah. Yeah. She even insisted on watching Logan with me, which I know some people will probably hear this and go, oh my God, you let your 6-year-old watch Logan, which is rated R. Yeah. Okay. And she requested it. Wolverine is her favorite character. And even though I explained to her ahead of time, listen, I'm going to have to break this to you. If you want to watch this movie, both Logan and Professor X die. You need to be ready for that. Like, you love these guys. They're your favorite. You talk about it. Like, you have to be able to be prepared for this. I want you to be, like, she insisted, and she's been a trooper ever since. She's still one of her favorite movies. You know, she has to watch it. She has to watch it every month or so. But because of that love for superheroes, I had picked up a bunch of different superhero books that I had found on Amazon, and one of them was like the A to Z Marvel characters, and the other one was the A to Z DC characters. And one day I'm just sitting there, and I'm like, wait a minute. There's basically at least one of these guys for every one of these letters. So I started presenting it to them as that, like, oh, look at this. So-and-so's name starts with A, and all of a sudden they were interested. Yeah. And that's actually what pushed them over the edge to wanting to actually know all their letters beyond just saying the alphabet. Because, you know, by that point they could repeat it, but they really weren't making the connections.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, man, I love that stuff. I think, like I said, I think a lot of people take that for granted. They don't recognize that these kids would kind of figure these things out of necessity, you know, even if they needed help, that they would at least come to a point where it's like, hey, I need to do this. Mom, dad, whoever, can you help me? Like, I want to learn. You know.
Yeah, it's to me it's an illustration about why central planning fails. Because the idea is that, you know, the central planner looks at the child as the same way a central planner looks at the citizen or a person and says, I know what's best for you. You know, you need to do this and I need to tax you here so that I change your behavior so you don't do that and you do this more, you know? And the reality is no, you don't know what people want or need or desire. And all we can do is, you know, maybe expose them, present new ideas. But that's about it. You can't force people. The moment you try to force people, they're just going to push back and you're going to fail. Especially if you're trying to force them to love or enjoy something that you love. Most of the time that ends up in them hating it. So it completely backfires. But, But yeah, that's kind of interesting that that your kids watch. Is it both your kids? You say both your kids watch, right?
Now they do. Yes, it all started. I guess they were about four, and one of them woke up early. I think it was my Harley, who I call my mini me a lot of the times. I think it was her sister Emma who actually came into the room one morning. This is back when Jen and the girls were living, you know, separately after we had originally split up. And they were spending the weekend with me, and I had been watching the first Avengers the night before. You know, I went to, you know, I like to watch movies or whatever, like stuff that I've seen a billion times. So I don't actually have to watch it. I can just listen to it. But that's usually how I put myself to sleep at night.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's just something I've always done. Usually doesn't work out as well when I'm with somebody and I'm sharing a bed, because they usually don't appreciate it the same way I do. But when I sleep alone, I almost always have the TV on. It's just something I've always done. But so anyway, that night I had been watching the Avengers. So when she came in the morning, she saw the DVD cover sitting on my bed. And she's like, "What's this, Daddy?" And it was still up on the screen, frozen at like wherever it had paused in the movie. Mm-hmm. And because there was the sleep timer was on, I didn't realize it, but it just like froze it there. And she was like, "Oh, what's this?" Because she had seen, I guess, a cartoon of the Avengers or something, and like thought they were kind of cool and stuff like that. And I actually already introduced them to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from back when we were growing up, back in the late 80s, early 90s. And they thought they were great. So she had in her head, "Oh, more superheroes." So I'm like, I was thinking about it at the time, and I'm like, I thought to myself, I'm probably going to get hell from this, including from their mother. But all right, I'm like, "I'll put it on for you if you want to watch it." And she was just like awestruck. "Oh my God, this is amazing." Then when her sister watched up, yeah, "I saw this with Daddy. You have to watch it. We have to watch it." So we sat and watched it, and they fell in love with like the characters and miming out the different fight scenes and stuff. Yeah. And, you know, and this was also around the time I was teaching them about self-defense, because unfortunately they would go after each other a lot. And I was like, "Listen, I can't physically stop. Like, I can't, you know, I'm trying to be a peaceful parent, so I'm not going to hit you for trying to hit your sister. But the only thing I could do is teach your sister to hit back."
Yeah.
<You know? laughs>
Right.
So it was all around this time. And then after watching it a couple of times, something got triggered with my one daughter where she's watched the scene in the Avengers the first time that Bruce Banner turns into the Hulk, and it freaked her out. And after that, she couldn't watch anymore. She still loved talking about it. She still loved playing the imaginary game with her sister, but she could never watch any of these movies. So that kind of became a thing with my one daughter and I, Harley, that was our thing. That was our daddy-daughter time. Whenever she wanted to stay with me an extra night, when it was just me and her, or whether she just wanted to hang out with me for a day or whatever, that's what she wanted to do. She wanted to watch all these movies. So now at this point, she's seen most of the Marvel Universe, I think. Wow. The whole family sat down and watched the latest Thor Ragnarok the other day, which they thought was the greatest thing ever, because they love Thor and the Hulk, and they just think it's the great. And of course now Valkyrie is their new favorite person, because they're like, "Oh, another cool woman, another cool girl who kicks butt and does all these things." You know, because up until then, actually, Black Widow, Natasha Romanoff, played by Scarlett Johansson in the Avengers series, that's Harley. Like Harley, she wants to dress up as her all the time. She wants to be her. She is the Black Widow most of the time. But yeah, man, they love it. And I'm like, and you know, Jen's on board with it too. And you know, other than they get a little crazy sometimes with their acting out of it, which we've had to talk to them about, and we've said, okay, maybe we need to scale back on this. But we try to keep the lines of communication open about it with them. We're not just, "Oh, we're taking this away from you." It's like, okay, maybe we should think about watching something else when it's time to watch a movie. Because, you know, we don't watch movies all day long or something. It's like once a week or something, we'll throw one of these on, you know. And it's like, maybe we need to think about watching, maybe we'll watch a cartoon this time, you know. Maybe, just, you know, if you're getting a little nutty, but we talk about it. And, yeah,
that's funny. That's actually the first time I've heard someone, a parent, say, "Yeah, we got to push the cartoons because they want to watch violent or a superhero." Like, you don't hear that too much. Like with my kids, they definitely prefer cartoons. You know, the computer animation as well as, you know, just regular cartoons. My son is much more sensitive, and I guess my daughter, they kind of both are. Like, if one doesn't want to watch something, probably the other one doesn't want to watch either. Like, and I try to get them, like look at Kong, Skull Island. Wow, let's watch that. So cool. No, they don't want to. It looks scary. Let's watch, you know, the I don't know, whatever. Oh yeah, Logan is on Netflix. No, they don't want to watch that. Like, oh, I haven't been able to watch an adult movie in such a long time, because every time we watch a movie on a weekend with the kids, it's always a cartoon. Yeah, it's tough. I like superhero movies. I think a lot of people. Some people that I tell that to, they get surprised, like, what? Really? And then they say, what? They say, I don't like superhero movies because it's so mindless and it's
exactly.
Just mindless.
It's
and
all
that
fun.
And I tell them that one of the reasons that I do is because I'm in my head all the time with chess and with my writing and with the podcasting. You know, it's all intellectual stuff, and sometimes you just want to turn it off. As in the words of my brother, my ex-brother-in-law, he's like, hey, sometimes I just want to see shit blow up. That's it.
Exactly.
See people fighting and see stuff blow up. But I think it's cool. I think it's just relaxing. You know, it's just like, oh, yeah. You don't have to think about anything. Although I guess with the recent Black Panther thing, you know, that's kind of they're trying to touch on some political issues with that. You know, it's not just apparently it's not just a superhero movie. It's a movement.
Oh no, I still haven't seen that one yet. I allegedly may have been able to obtain a copy of it, but it wasn't the greatest. So I didn't do anything illegal or anything. Of course, I would only download them from the proper sources. But
right,
it's not quite ready for prime time yet. And I've talked about this before on the show. I have such an issue with movie theaters in general. Although we're gonna take the girls at some point soon to their first in theater movie rather.
Yeah.
Although I'm still kind of skeptical about that because they do like to get up and walk around so much, and still they're not, you know, sitting through a whole thing. But yeah, but like I said, I was gonna say, the whole thing with the superhero movies, I'm the same way as you. You know, like I do a bunch of other stuff, and I watch other things too that some people would probably consider not very intellectual, but I don't care. But I appreciate all, even the Marvel movies, because I know there's a lot of people out there that think they're, you know, a lot of them are just garbage or whatever. I'm like, yeah, I know. But I appreciate them for what they are, for exactly how you describe them. You know, they're fun. You don't have to think. And I get to see the characters from my childhood that I read the actual comics of. You know, I get to see them come to life. And I like the actors they picked for the most part to play most of these guys. I think they're all great. So, you know, it's enjoyable for me. Who cares? You know, and like the fact that my kids love it is even better.
Yeah, I think I would be more disposed to wanting to watch the Black Panther movie if it wasn't for all of this like political debate around it. To me, that just detracts from like the whole fictional nature of what a superhero movie is. It's supposed to be fiction. It's not politics. It's not a movement. It's just fiction. It's sad. Same thing with Wonder Woman. I think I would have been more inclined to want to watch that, whereas now I'm less inclined because of like feminists, like, you know, clutching it so tightly as being, you know, such a wonderful portrayal of a feminine strong character, as if we have never had strong feminine characters in movies in the past, right?
Oh yeah, well, both of those are great examples of that, because I mean, how many memes were made of both of them where it was like, we have the first women superhero strong, and like there would be memes with like, you know, Sigourney Weaver and Aliens and all these other women throughout history that have played leading roles. Is like, what, you know, what the fuck?
Yeah, Sarah Connor.
Exactly. Same thing with the Black Panther. It's like, we finally have a black superhero, and there's always the picture of Wesley Snipes. Like, what the fuck, man? Like, what about Blade? You know, I did three fucking movies. It wasn't just like a one-hit wonder. I did three of these fucking things.
Yeah,
you know? But see, I don't know enough because I haven't seen it. And I rarely haven't read, like, I've read like some headlines and stuff. But I know with Wonder Woman, I've never sat and watched the entire thing, but Jen and the girls have. Like, that was another one they wanted to watch because they love Wonder Woman, of course. They actually like the old school Linda Carter TV show. That was one of the first superhero things I got them to watch, which that was back in what, like the 70s, 80s, right? I think it started before I was born. But that was the one portrayal of Wonder Woman for the longest time. But my kids watched that. Of course, I think I might have mentioned it on the show. I know I've talked about it in the Lulberts with Jim Jesus, but they actually love the old Batman 66 series too. The Adam West Batman, like those were two of the first things they got into, and that's where their love of super, because that's what I tried to show them first, like these campy ones that are not like not violent, not gory, because they were on network TV, you know, and they fell in love with them, and they wanted to know more and more. Like I said, my one daughter, she's obsessed with the Black Widow, and for the longest before that, it was Harley Quinn. That was her. That was her thing. She loves Harley Quinn. from Batman, you know, but yeah, you know, like I said, they're into it. I don't care. They dig it and makes.
Yeah, you know what you said was interesting. I didn't even think about it. That when people ask me like, "How's the homeschooling going?" I immediately go to what they're interested in. I never say, "Well, he can multiply, you know, 5 times 5. he can read a few sentences from a book." No, I never say that. I immediately go to what they're passionate about, what they're interested in, because to me, that's the most important thing, you know? We do math on Khan Academy, which is awesome. And actually that's another thing that's kind of interesting I noticed is that, you know, my sister, my daughter, and my son, they differ so much with math. Like my daughter is so much more physical in terms of the gymnastics and ballet and singing and moving her body. She's very much a physical person. And, you know, physically, she loves physics and moving, using her body. Whereas my son, definitely much more intellectual, mental with the, you know, the Minecraft with the, and he's definitely more into math. He gets it. He gets the math much more than my daughter does. And he can add and subtract, I think up to triple digit numbers, you know, and in the car just today. Yeah. Oh, I mean, I'm paper, but yeah, he's really good at it. And then like just in the car, I was teaching him I was helping him do like 60 minus 30 because we were talking about time. I was like, well, if I come home at 7:30, how much time before I have to do my podcast? Oh, okay, we figured that out, and he got it, you know, and you know, that was just in our head, and so, you know, he's learning time, how to tell time on a clock, in a face clock, so yeah, he definitely gets the math, and it reminds me of a video by Julia Taransky, Brave the World. I don't know if you saw it. She called it the 50 differences between men and women. Have you seen that video?
I actually, for some, like, she's one of those people who disappeared from my feed a long time ago I'm guessing because of the algorithms, and I kind of forgot she was out there, so I haven't seen anything from her in quite a while, actually.
Yeah, I follow her on YouTube mainly, and I saw that. It's excellent. I talk about it so much because I'm surrounded by, you know, leftist, feminist, I mean, one feminist.
Straight up socialist and people, right. People who think the communist system they came from was actually kind of good because they, like when people say, oh, I grew up, you know, I'm surrounded by Democrats. No. This is like what Danilo is surrounded by is a whole different level.
Yeah. It's weird when you talk to people that come from a communist country and they endorse it, and then you mention, well, what about the concentration camp? What about the gulags? What about the millions of people who died? They're like, that's propaganda. That's American capitalist propaganda. It never happened. What do you say to that? I mean, how do you even respond to that? I can't even say anything. The level of I don't know what other. What other word of indoctrination? The level of indoctrination is so deep you can't even uproot. They think Stalin is the savior. He unified Europe. It was a wonderful thing. In the same way that Genghis Khan unified, you know, Central and Eastern Asia. Oh, by the way, millions of people died. Yeah, right. But he unified everybody.
And he raped so many women that he's like, you know, I think his DNA is found in like, you know, some ridiculous thing, like 5% of the human population, which is just absurd.
I heard
one coming from one man.
Oh,
maybe it's
11%.
I don't know, something in that area, in one area over there. It's like 70% of the people all have genetic ties. So, yeah, great guys. They did a lot, you know.
So it's very difficult to talk to people like that. So usually with that particular person, I don't really broach the topic of capitalism versus socialism and communism because it just engenders, you know, bad feeling. But I am surrounded by those kinds of people. It's difficult, but I manage it somehow. I try to stay civil, you know, I say my piece and people, you know, now, most of the time,
did they, apart. because of most of the people so closely tied into your family structure there have these, you know, let's say socialist leanings, to be, you know, nice about it. Do they still give you guys a problem about wanting to do things outside of the school structure? Because I know most of the time, I mean, you know, like I said, my parents, my dad actually was cool with it. My mom, public school teacher, you know, thought we were crazy at first. Mm. And Jen's family thinks we're insane. You know, do you still get that from them? Or are they kind of like at the point, well, it's, they, you know, Marcus is succeeding well enough at this point to, you know, I guess we might have been a little wrong. Or do they still harass you about the fact that they're not in school?
Yeah. We moved farther away from them a year ago. And so that's one of the reasons why we're hearing less from them. But recently, my mother, I mean, both my parents have been, you know, gently urging us, like, you know, we found a good, you know, private school near you guys, and it's just, you know, $20,000 a year. And all this stuff. And so, yeah, it's a little bit. Oh, yeah, there's also something interesting, which is when my wife is like tired or complains of, you know, stress at work. And then my mother comes in, you see, if they went to school, and then she would be less stressed. So it's always like, you know, or if she's very sick, you know, she had the flu pretty bad recently. You see, that's because you're homeschooling. Everything, all the difficulties in our lives now, you see, if you weren't homeschooling, you wouldn't have.
Oh, wow. So there's still this. Yeah, well, distance doesn't stop that, obviously, because that's what I meant, though. I didn't mean like they were harassing you in the house, or but they're still like harassing you through phone calls and messages, I guess. Yeah, they haven't let it go, huh?
I mean, yeah, a little bit. I mean, they're slowly realizing that, you know, I've had to say, no, we're going to stay on the course, you know, we're going to continue doing what we're doing because we think it's working, you know? And, I mean, I don't understand how people can feel, you know, there's so many things like, you know, you got the school shootings, you know, and then like so many things that you always hear about, kids getting arrested, you know, for drawing a gun or eating a Pop-Tart in the shape of a gun. The most ridiculous things. And I don't understand how people can't realize how, you know, disempowered, how, you know, just insignificant they consider the children to be. And also, the way I look at it, people who send their kids to school, it's kind of a message saying, here, you raise the kid. I had the kid, but you raise the kid, you know, because that's essentially what's happening. You know, when you give your kid over to somebody, and it doesn't even have to be government school. It can be even private school. You know, it's kind of the same way I look at it. If you're not with your kid, you know, you don't have to be with your kid constantly until they're a teenager, you know, but, you know, especially in the early formative years, it's so vital that you're with them and developing that strong bond. Because, you know, that I think is going to be, you know, that's going to do wonders to ensuring a, you know, a strong, self-reliant, independent individual. So, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. I mean, that's why with that piece that I wrote that was, you know, I guess kind of lengthy. It was like 2,800 words or something. But that's why I spent the one section I spent the most amount of time on. You know, for all the different issues I saw with a lot of the way a lot of people raise their kids, you know, I guess not to sugarcoat it, but was the schooling aspect. And you know, you said, you know, you were saying you kind of dumbfounded about how people can not see this. Well, you know, the reality is, unfortunately, they can't see it because they were put through the process and they don't recognize what happened to them. They still don't view what happened to them as indoctrination. So sure, why wouldn't we do, you know, if a lot of people, you know, not even the not cynical ones. Some people say this, you know, very earnestly and they believe it. It's like, well, I you know, I survived it. Why, you know, why wouldn't my kids, you know? And, you know, you hear things like silly things, just like in a lot of things, like, oh, it'll, you know, it helps build character. And of course, there's all the horrible straw men, like, you know, socialization and all this stuff. But yeah, a lot of people don't. You know, a lot of people don't recognize that. And the other thing you mentioned about people just kind of pawning the raising of their children off on the government or, you know, the government schools. Well, yeah, there is a certain section of the population that totally views it as essentially a daycare for their kids. You know, like, okay, this is what I have to do. Most people, I think, don't think they have a choice. They look at this, their rather narrow view of the world from the indoctrination they received and never broke themselves out of is, well, we have to, you know, whether it's a single parent family or full, the nuclear family, whatever kind of family, whatever it is, like, okay, we have to work to be able to afford all this stuff and everybody has to work. Mm-hmm. We just don't have the time. We can't afford it. You know, whether they are complaining about taxes or whatever it is, like everything's too high. We have to work. Otherwise we can't. Mm-hmm. And I mean, whenever I do get into these discussions with people, my first point that I always try to bring up with that is, have you ever considered how much money you would save by not going to work, whatever the job it is? If it's a two-parent family, it's like, and both of you are working and you think you have to work, it's like, well, let's look at what both of you do, how much money you bring in. How much money do you have to lay out, whether it's for, travel, clothes for work, eating, feeding yourself when you're away from home, like all these different factors that most people don't even think of. It's like, okay, forget about just cutting a salary off. Don't look at it from that perspective. Look at it from how much you would save by not doing all these other things. And when you start to do that, a lot of people will actually realize, oh, wait a minute. It wouldn't be as insane if one of us just stopped working, or one of us started working a heck of a lot less, or if one of us found some way to transition to part-time homework or whatever it is. Like, it's really not that bad. You know, but it's that conditioning. Well, this is just the way things are, you know, especially if your parents brought you up like that too. Like, well, you got to go to school because I went to school. And, you know, once you have your family, this is what you got to do. You got to work. You got to support your family. And if both of you got to work, well, you know, whatever it is, like, that's just how the generations and generations go by like that, especially, you know, like here in the good old USSA, that started in what, like the late 50s, early 60s, that started to change where the women started working more and more and more, I guess, you know, because you still have the images of the 1950s where most of the time, you know, except for the war, when the war is when they were forced to go to work because all the men were getting themselves shot up all over the world. Other than that, there was just that was the image because that's what it is. And then once that started to change, then that just became the new norm. And now most people who have, I refer to it as the goldfish mentality. Most people can't remember beyond like the last year, and that's being conservative, with historical things, like things that have happened. People are just like, oh yeah, that's the way it was. They believe the stories they're told. But they don't, like I said, they don't recognize that, yeah, this is the way it shifted for a while. Cause, well, I mean, we can get into it at some point, but government kind of screwed everything up even worse where people had to work more. But when it comes down to it, if you're one hold up about taking your kids out of school and attempting to homeschool and unschool and whatever is this, we just can't afford it. Chances are, I don't think you've looked at every aspect of that.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, that's a wonderful, topic to bring up to people of income, compare how far a single person income in the 1950s went and how far that goes today. And I think that's a wonderful illustration of the monetary system, the Federal Reserve, inflation, right? And why is it that a one-person income can support a family of four people, a house, maybe two cars? How is that possible? I was just talking to my wife just today because I was trying to watch Netflix with my son. My daughter was in ballet, and we couldn't because my wife was using Netflix, right? She says, no, not more than one user. You got to upgrade. And then I told my wife, and she's like, because I said, I think I remember a time when Netflix did allow you to use two people at the same time on the same account. And so she's like, yeah, every business is cutting back. And to me, that immediately reminded me of the idea of stealth inflation. Whereas most people understand inflation, most common people understand inflation to be rising prices, right? But that's kind of half the story. Why are the prices rising? The prices are rising in response to the value of the currency falling, devaluation of the currency. So your currency is worth less, so therefore prices have to rise to accommodate for that. And so one way that that producers can kind of shift around resources so that their prices do not rise, because people hate rising prices. You know, if you're buying, you know, your cereal at the same price, or you're buying your tissues or your toilet paper at some price, and then the exact same thing costs more the next time you go, you're going to be angry, right? So in order to avoid that anger and that loss of business, the producers just sell the same product with less. Like, you know, a box of 120 tissues all of a sudden goes down to 100 tissues, and it's the same price, right? So it's stealth inflation. People don't necessarily recognize it as acutely as they would if the price went up, right? And so I think, realizing that, it's like just to think about, you know, my lifetime and your lifetime. Like, I remember going in the 90s, going to the store with my family. You know, we were four of us. Yeah, probably my brother too. He was like little. So all five of us going to a grocery store, and I was amazed when the total came out to $100. That was like an amazing thing. And like how easily is it to spend $100 today at a grocery store?
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's a wonderful illustration of the monetary system and the Federal Reserve and quantitative easing and, you know, printing of currency. And the Mandrake mechanism and all that, and that's a great way to get a little economics lesson into whoever you're talking to.
Yeah, see, I wasn't even thinking of it in those terms, but yeah, you're right. It is. I guess I did, because I said, you know, I made the reference to, yeah, we could talk about that. It's government's fault in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But if we're going to stay focused on the schooling aspect, then yeah, we don't have to get into that now. But yeah, no, I get what you're saying. Yeah, it definitely is. And, you know, and even teaching your kids, you know, it's a great lesson. And funny, you know, some people may hear that and think, you know, that we're talking about kids who are our kids' age, which is what, ranging between the ages of 7 and 5, I guess, whatchamacallit. Most people would think, oh, your kids that age aren't going to understand these things. It's like, well, my kids, I don't know. I mean, everybody likes to think their kids are smart, I think, except, you know, some people are really honest if they have kids that aren't that bright, I guess. But most people on the whole like to brag about how smart their kids are. And, you know, I've always thought my kids were smarter than most people gave credit for. And then even, you know, Jen had to come around at one point and say, yeah, I think you're right about this. They definitely catch on. They haven't done a lot of like the, you know, going back to the earlier conversation about, you know, the typical school stuff that people expect to hear from you if you're explaining what your kids are up to type of thing, you know, like where they are on all these levels. Like, they probably could be farther in a lot of these things, but they both have one heck, because, you know, they're my children. They have one hell of a stubborn streak, both of them. And when they don't want to do things, and even if we're not pushing them, if they feel like they're being pushed, they shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but I can still talk to them about like these more complex ideas, like even something like, I don't think I've gotten this far yet, but like I probably could try to go through the whole Mandrake mechanism thing with them, because another thing I've done, you know, like I said, I get a lot of flack from people for some of the movies I allow my kids to see and for what I've exposed them to in certain areas.
Mm-hmm.
And also how I speak around them, and not only around them, but to them, because I have always spoken to them in the least dumbed down fashion I possibly could. Like, I've always tried to speak to them basically how I would speak to anybody else. And once they started asking questions, like once they start getting to the point of being very verbal and, you know, being able to communicate a lot better, if they got to a word that they'd never heard from me before, they never understood, they would actually ask me. So, you know, great, another perfect learning experience where most people, like, a word they would never think to teach their children, but it may come in handy later. It's like, well, no, I've taught them at a very early age because it literally came up in conversation. But because I've always spoken to them in that manner, their vocab, like, while they might not be writing perfectly and doing all this stuff that some people may think the kids their age should be doing, their vocabulary is far, like, the words they come out with is far beyond most people that I've come across their age. And what I, you know, like I said, I can vaguely remember myself at that age. And I know I used a lot of big words, but again, I was kind of a freak who taught myself to read at 4 and was reading very advanced stuff by the age I was 6, by the time I was 6 years old. So I'm a different case, but I kind of remember everybody else. And it's like, yeah, they really do not, they don't just use them, but they know them. And, you know, another thing I get yelled at for is because, well, I have a dirty mouth too, and they've heard all that stuff, but also they may use that language, but they always use it in proper context. I don't think I can recall a case where one of my daughters has thrown like a sly like fucking out there without it being a perfectly placed, I guess, adjective. Is that what it is in that place? Or,
okay.
Or adverb, whatever. Like, you know, when they do say, of course, it mortifies like Jen's parents and my family. You know, but I'm like, you know, and at first Jen was kind of bothered by it, but now she kind of like, yeah, you know, like we have to keep looking at each other. It's like, well, number one, we can't get mad because, well, they heard us say it. So it's, right. I'm not going to be that hypocrite that, you know, that do as I say, not as I do. That was another thing, you know, a couple of things I promised my kids when they were very, very little and could, you know, probably not even really understand what I was saying to them at all as they were lying in the incubators in the NICU for the first month of their life was I would never lie to them. And I would try my hardest to never talk down to them or baby up my talk for them as a lot of other people in their lives were most likely going to do. you know, and I try to stick with it since then. And, you know, I think it helps. Like, you know, like I said, they're exposed to, just like you were talking about before, your kids are, you know, when you bring your kids up like this, they're exposed to so many things that people are just like, they still think are taboo. And it's like, well, no, like maybe your kids are, you know, maybe you're not ready for this stuff, but your kids might surprise you. They might be a hell of a lot mature and a hell of a lot more capable than you are.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't usually curse at all, unless I guess if I'm quoting a movie or something, if I'm imitating somebody. But my wife definitely does if she's pissed off and angry. So we know where they get it from. If she does, if my kids do, but they don't much. But yeah. So with my kids, in terms of not like telling them things as it is, like explain them, like just earlier this week, maybe just yesterday, I taught them the meaning of the word parasite. Because
one of my favorite
words. Because I was driving
on
the highway and then the Waze told me that, you know, police officer up ahead, and we passed the guy, and I was just looking at this guy. He was in an undercover black car, and he had his window down, and I saw him out, you know, he had the
radar gun?
The machine, the radar?
Yeah, the radar gun.
The speedometer. Huh?
Radar gun.
Yeah, so he's pointing at everybody, and I don't know, it just seems so parasitical. And so I was like, that's a parasite. My son's like, what's a parasite? Well, it's like a tick. You know, you take care of your body, you feed yourself, you keep yourself strong and healthy. And then a tick comes along and just attaches itself and sucks your lifeblood and sucks your nourishment. They didn't do any work. They didn't earn it. They just take it. So that's what a parasite is. See, that's what a police officer does. He's not doing any work. See, everybody on the highway, everyone's doing work. They're going somewhere important.
Everybody's going somewhere important, but I get what you're saying.
Well, yeah, most people. But like, is he doing something important? And the kids are like, no, he's just sitting there. He's just waiting to steal somebody's money with a ticket or harass peaceful people. And then my daughter's like, why do police officers like to harass peaceful people? I don't know. They just want to do that.
Because, honey, it's their job. At least that's what they tell us.
Does that sound like a good job? No, it's a little bit mean. I know. It's very mean. So I was very pleased with myself that I introduced a new word. And, yeah.
Well, of course, that word holds special meaning for me.
So it's go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, my kids know police officers as road pirates.
Well, I used to use that too.
Which I
say that interchangeably.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've used the word parasite in that context around them before, but I don't think we've ever actually had that conversation. I think they just let that one go by. I don't think we've actually, you know, okay. I don't think they ever actually asked me the question outright. So I didn't, you know, I just never actually answered it. But yeah. the road pirates thing, to me, it's, I mean, I've talked about this before, but it's always the funniest for me because their grandfather, my would-be father-in-law, because Jen and I were never legally married and we never will be legally married. It's just, you know, that's not our thing. My would-be father-in-law is a former New York City cop. So, like, the fact that that word, that phrase has popped out of their mouth around him, like, I know it's just like a knife in his heart every time, and I could not be prouder of my girls at that moment.
Well, what does he say when they say that?
I just know it's come up. I've never actually pressed to see what's actually, because I don't really care. I mean, him and I never really liked each other. We tolerated each other for a decent amount of time. But once we announced that Jen was pregnant, like, it was back to not really liking each other very much, you know, because here I was, this guy that he was already iffy about, you know, now knocking up his daughter and refusing to marry her, and making it known that part of it was in spite, because him and others kept trying to pressure me to do so, and I was like, you guys can all kiss my ass, you're not going, you know, you're not going to tell me how to run my life. And this was before I was an anarchist. Like, this was part of my transition. Like, I was just, I was starting to reject all authority again, and I was like, no, you're not forcing this on me. Screw you.
Right.
So I don't know I'm sure he just shakes his head, but I know it has to kill him. And, like, that's good enough for me.
Yeah. And talking about, you know, wonderful learning opportunities, Monopoly is also a game that's pretty cool in a lot of ways. Which, incidentally, my Soviet Union homeschooling mother hates, I recently learned this, hates Monopoly.
Oh, and because it's a greedy capitalistic.
Exactly. It's all about buying stuff and acquiring houses and things, and you gotta get more money. She just hates every fiber of it, and it's kind of funny. But you know what's even funnier? Her kids love it.
Oh man, like, that's gotta be horrible for her.
A couple of weeks ago, she and her husband have chosen not to buy that game, right? At all. They don't have it in the house at all. But she says if they go to someone else's house and they play the game, she's fine with that. She's not gonna, like, you know, rip them out.
Okay, well, that's at least she's not. I know a lot of parents who would take it to that level, so that's good at least.
Right. So she's at least, I guess, tolerant of them doing things like that. And so, yeah, they've gone to our friend's house and they played Monopoly for the first time like a few weeks ago, and they love it. And then just like last week, they played it again and they love it. They, you know, her kids are learning. The parents are from Kyrgyzstan, but you know they're teaching them Russian, so they know English and Russian. But they're learning, you know, they're very smart kids, and they love the money thing. It's all about counting. Oh yeah, and my son, I've taught him what the income tax is. So he asked my son, "What's the income tax?" I asked him, "What's the income tax?" Like, that's when the government takes your money. Yes, it is.
See, that's exactly brilliant. I love Monopoly. I started playing Monopoly at a very young age, but I had never, like, I'm sure we have at least one version of it in the house. I know I used to have Dogopoly because somebody bought it for me when I was running my pet sitting business. They thought it would be cute. I don't think I've ever actually played it, but I never thought of that. But it's, we are actually getting into money again right now, because they had a bunch of different, like, toy cash registers laying around for the past couple of years now, but they were always like, either one was like the Disney princess one, and another one was like some other, you know, cheesy one when they were like for like toddlers, basically, that comes with like a little shopping cart stuff. And they have money, but it's like these giant coins and all this stuff. So, and as much as I hate fiat, we do want them to understand what they're going to be dealing with in their current life, you know? So teaching them about the way the fake money that the government gives us works is probably a good thing. So we just recently purchased a better cash register, one that actually comes with bills that are more the size of dollar bills and stuff, and actually have like Washington's picture on the one and Lincoln's picture on the five and stuff like that. And the coins are different sizes to represent, you know, even the pennies brown instead of silver like the other ones, you know, all this stuff. But I never thought of Monopoly. That's actually brilliant. I'm gonna have to bring that, because they do like playing board games. Like, they like, there's certain games, cool. Like, actually, even though, like, we have like the original versions of some of them, but of course they sometimes prefer the ones that are like their different character versions. But like games like Trouble and Connect Four, like different weird games like that, my kids have always loved. And they do like board games because, you know, they love Candyland. They love we have a couple of different variations of Chutes and Ladders and stuff like that. So I should totally try that with them. That's great.
Yeah. Also, ever since last year, I think Thanksgiving time, my mother-in-law and sister-in-law came over. We were playing Uno, and What was the other? Oh, Cranium. Yeah, we were also playing. Have you played that game, Cranium?
I think once or twice, maybe a long time ago, but I'm barely remembering it.
Yeah, excellent game, and I'm pretty sure my kids wanted to play. Yeah, they were playing, and they loved it. It's a really fun game. Yeah, very, very educational. But yeah, also, and the other thing I wanted to say is my, I draw a clear distinction, with my son, especially because I was precious metal shopping with him when he was, little. So he remembers taking him to the gold silver shop, and he loved it because they would like play with, you know, antique toys and cars, and which is really funny. And this one guy was so close and loved my son. He would give him a car too every time he would come. So he loved going there. But yeah, he, my son understands there's a difference between currency and money. Money is gold and silver, and currency is paper. It's a currency. It's just paper. You know, it's just, they just print the paper. Oh yeah. So yeah, he loves it. And, sometimes my kids take out some of the silver coins and play with them. And, so yeah, it's a lot of fun. So, you know, money again, because it's physical, you know, the kids get, it's not just intellectual, you know, when you make it hands on, I think that makes it comes alive for the kids, right? It makes it even more fun and interactive. And, it's amazing how government school can take such wonderful topics such as money and business and economics and make it so dry and uninteresting. And it's so sad. It just destroys, possible interests or passions that somebody might have in this subject if it was presented to them in a, sparkling manner.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I will always probably argue that that's done on purpose. The one Rothbard quote about, you know, the being a dismal science and people being ignorant of it and whatnot. It's definitely presented to be this dismal science that only the nerdiest of nerds would have any interest in. And you don't really need it anyway. You know, as long as you know what you can buy with the money that you have in your pocket, you'll be good. You know, that's another, you know, I mean, that we could get into a whole nother discussion about that, but I know you're probably going to have to get going soon. So I don't want to keep you too long because we did get a late start with the technical difficulties we had early on. But yeah, I believe that's done on purpose, as well as a bunch of other subjects that are purposely not taught. And, just money in general is definitely a big, you know, money, taxes, you having to pay taxes, all these different things really have been, you know, they weren't taught that much to begin with, and they became less and less to the point, like, I mean, I remember back, I was in, you know, school in the 80s and 90s, and I remember them already phasing out the different classes they had for stuff like that. And they were always electives anyway. And just like with things like philosophy, they were always couched as, oh, these are just like, you know, the frou-frou sciences that if you really want to get into, or you're really nerdy, or you're, you know, you want to get into this stuff, you're fine, but nobody's going to take you seriously. Or you're just going to be so bored out of your mind that nobody's going to want to talk to you. So you might as well not do it. You know, that's kind of how it was presented. And now I don't think they have, in most schools, they don't even have those classes at all anymore. You know, like civics classes and stuff like that. Like they try to teach you as least amount as possible what you have to deal with. But again, that's why we were talking earlier about the whole thing. We're talking about the whole unschooling process and having the self directed learning, where you have your kids learn about what they want to learn about, but not just any old thing they want to learn about. You can find ways to incorporate the real, you know, what actually happens in the real world into what they want to know about. You know, like I mentioned earlier with the using the superheroes to be able to teach them their alphabet and finally get that understanding, you know, all things like right. that. Or, you know, the thing like teaching them math by doing stuff at the supermarket or whatever it is, you know, all these different things. I think, you know, I mean, it's been said, I've been hearing it a lot lately, that, you know, it's about 15,000 hours, give or take, that you have to spend in the government schools, basically, most people. And it actually only takes like, what, 200 hours, I think it's been, people are talking about, that it really only takes about that many hours to teach all the basics of things that kids want to know, that kids need to know to be able to expand their on their own beyond that, you know, like the reading and basic arithmetic and all that stuff. Right. 200 hours or less. So, you know, your kids don't have to get to it right away, but they'll figure it out a lot, you know, as they go. And real world experience has definitely helped that. And you don't get a lot of those when they're spending a good portion of their day locked away in one building and then moved around like to maybe to other activities that are also connected to different things that are all in these buildings, and you're not getting all these real world experiences. So
anyway. Yeah, as with most government programs, it's government school is one giant broken window fallacy of lost and annihilated opportunities and possibilities of what the kids might have done and might have achieved if they weren't forced to be in an institution for 12 years, right? And it's very tragic when you reflect on that and you begin to understand, like, wow, what could I have done with my life if I wasn't forced to learn, you know, such useless, irrelevant, ridiculous things? Who knows? And then when my parents, one of the arguments they used to say is, why are you so against government school? Look at you. You're successful. You're smart. You got, you know, acupuncture degree, and you got a beautiful wife and two kids and a nice house and a condo. Why? What do you have to complain about? You know, you should be happy you went to school. And my response is, well, where could I have been? What opportunities were lost? Maybe I could have done so much more with my life if I wasn't forced to do that. And, you know, who knows? I don't know. That's the problem. The seen versus the unseen. And also wanted to mention one thing about the money is one thing, you know, to teach the kids about the currency versus money thing. But then the other thing is to, you know, either give them like allowance or maybe pay them to do chores, or, you know, even giving them money for Tooth Fairy is awesome because it teaches them that, you know, money is finite, right? And they can use the money for something, but if they do, then they have less money. So it's not infinite, it's not endless, right? Which is what they think when, you know, every time, you know, the parents buy them something, like, oh, if you want something, just ask, you know, mom and dad. But once they have their own money, they begin to understand, like, no, you know, I should have to think about what I'm going to buy because I'm going to have less money.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I almost got triggered when you said Tooth Fairy, but that's I think I actually mentioned that in that article that I'm, or the essay that I wrote that I'll post in the show notes. That specifically, but yeah, you can use it as long as, because like I said, they know that Jen's the one who puts the money under there, but they're they still want to call it the Tooth Fairy, which is great. They, you know, they still want to do that old make believe thing on their own, but yeah. they do get to understand, you know, they get to learn about money about that, especially my one daughter has. It's funny, you know, I don't want to get off too much of a tangent, but the one thing I will say is it's funny with my two daughters, you know, like, you know, you were saying earlier, obviously, you know, your kids are very different, and, you know, one's very analytical and one's very athletic. I have a situation with my twins. It's actually a lot of the same way. They would both be physical, I think, if it wasn't for Emma's limitations, you know, certain limitations because of her situation. But she's actually extremely analytical on top of that. So she's really dangerous. She could be really dangerous. You know, she could be one of those things that could be great power for good or really, really dangerous. Kind of like me. I see a lot of her. You know, she's not my mini-me, but I see a lot of her on my, you know, other people have remarked that too. But just the, now I kind of lost where I was going with that. Gosh darn it. See, this is what happens. What were we just talking about?
Tooth Fairy.
Oh, the Tooth Fairy thing. Yeah. With the money, when it comes to the money thing, one of them likes to, conserve her money. She's kind of just like, you know, I'd like something, but I don't have to. The other one's kind of like always trying to figure out how much she needs, like, especially whenever she's obsessed with some new thing. Like, she's trying to figure out how can I use, you know, and we try to find ways to dissuade her from it without, like, telling her no, because we want her to learn, you know, the consequences of your actions. But it's like I said, even parents who give their kids allowance, not all of them think that far ahead and are actually, they're just like giving them money, but they're not really, you know, teaching this lesson along the way. But this is another one that I think most kids can grasp. And I think my kids and your kids are great examples of that, that they can grasp it. You just got to give them the opportunity. So
I'll say one thing about the Tooth Fairy. It's an awesome topic because, I was thinking about the incentives. What incentive does that give to the kids? Lose a tooth, get money. What incentive does that give? Knock out your teeth as quick as possible. So we had to refine the Tooth Fairy rule. Oh, by the way, our kids know that there's no Tooth Fairy either. They know that Monica does it, but they still, again, play along. So this woman, the Parenting Junkie I interviewed for my channel, she was saying, you know, she put it very well when she said, that, you know, they can understand that it's fantasy and then it's not real, but they can still play the game and pretend it's real, which is fun. You know, so they're playing along, even though they know it's not real. And so it's not lying to them because they know it's you. You know, and what's funny is after, after like my daughter lost her recent tooth and then I forgot to put the money, like it was morning, and then I put the money really quick, but she checked it already and the tooth was still there. So I put the money really quick and then she gave me the tooth. And then she asked me, cause there's like a book that looks like a book, but it's like something where we put, you know, stuff in, like their past teeth or, you know, important documents. And she's like, so daddy, you got to put it in that.
Making sure you know where it goes.
It was so funny. Like, they know the in and out of it all, but yeah. So yeah, I just wanted to say it's a fun game, you know, and that's kind of how I look at the Tooth Fairy. I don't, you know, same thing with Santa Claus, you know, it's just a fun game. So yeah, it's so important, you know, talking about, you know, not lying to your kids. And that's definitely something that, is very important to me as well. And my wife, I think, has a little bit of difficulty giving up the whole Santa Claus thing. You know, she was hesitant to say, you know, when they would ask questions, you know, where does he come from? Where's Santa Claus? How does he get that here? You know, she was hesitant to answer those kind of questions, but, you know, I kind of, you know, ask them, do you think somebody, you know, can fit down that chimney? What do you think?
Do you think somebody can really stop at every house?
Right.
In one night? I mean, the logistics, they seem a little nutty. I don't know. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah. Always turn the question to them, get them thinking. And the other thing about money is paying them to do chores or something. I mean, they can do regular stuff, but maybe paying them to do extra stuff. I think that's awesome. That gives them the idea of, oh, I can actually work and earn money, you know, and that gives them even more of an appreciation for money. And that's one thing that this woman, the Parenting Junkie, was talking about, how, you know, she's encouraging business skills and entrepreneurship, which is awesome. So, yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, I'll just say that on both those points, the whole thing with the, you know, them still being able to have their fun with it and stuff like that when it comes to different, the fairy tales that people talk about. Yeah. I touched on that on my article too, because, you know, most people would automatically assume that I'm just trying to strip them from my kids. It's like, no, they can still have it. And they can have even more fun with it, you know, and right. I've watched my kids do that. So that is possible. And as far as money goes, yeah, absolutely. I think the encouraging entrepreneurship, because as you mentioned before, the whole, you know, the what ifs about what any of us could have accomplished had we not been forced to be in this one place at this for this extended period of time of our lives, when we could have been free to do all these other different things and explored all these different avenues, where would we have all ended up? You know, I think it's an absolutely great thing to teach your kids that at a young age, because yeah, that's one of the things five, 10 years from now, I hope that my kids are already on their way to different entrepreneurship. And I mean, they talk about different ideas about what they want to do, but like any kid would. So they haven't taken a lot of it seriously yet, but I hope, you know, that's because that's another reason I got into the whole unschooling thing originally and the self-directed learning, because I see so many parents that are doing that and have their kids that are like 9, 10, 11, 12 years old already running successful businesses because they've been unleashed and allowed to focus on what makes them happy and makes them excited and makes them want to learn more.
Yeah.
And then they can focus that energy a lot a lot more effectively than pretty much any other kid their age who's not given that opportunity. So
yeah, if my son has money, he would spend it on remote control cars, helicopters and drones. That's like his favorite thing. And so, you know, he wants to buy the expensive ones, of course. Like he wants to buy this like $100 or maybe $150 drone, that a huge drone that you can put a camera on. but you know, and when he says that he wants to buy things like that, I say, you know, Marcus, you know what you can do? Since you love video games so much, you can design a video game, maybe make an app, and then you can sell it and then make more money. So I'm trying to encourage that subtly, some like a little programming, which actually on Khan Academy, they do have a free programming course. Oh, and by the way, everything on Khan Academy is free, so that's awesome. But they have a programming course to teach kids basic programming skills, which is cool. It's really awesome.
Yeah.
Looking forward to getting to that as well. But encouraging entrepreneurship. Oh my God. So, so important. It's like endless skills that can be acquired through that. So
Absolutely. Well, on that note, I think we should get wrapping up. So, Danilo, first of all, thank you very much, man. This has been great. It's always great to talk to you, but this was, like I told you originally, this was the whole parenting thing. I don't think we've done on here in a while, maybe at all on the show. So I definitely wanted to have one of these conversations, and, it worked out that we could finally schedule this. So before we get going, any closing words, and of course, plug away anything you want to plug before we, close out the show.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me on. I really do enjoy talking about this topic, and I do, I think I do focus on it quite a bit on my channel as well. I've interviewed quite a few unschooling mothers primarily, some fathers also, some homeschooling fathers. And actually, it reminds me, I remember there was a Skylar Collins made that compilation of unschooling dads, right?
Yes.
Book, which is pretty cool. I thought that was a great idea. So, because there is a scarcity of unschooling dads, but we are out there, you know, if you find us. And not all of us are socialists either, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, right.
I'm very, very happy to hear that. So really appreciate you having me on. My website is peacefulanarchism.com, and you can find me on YouTube, Peaceful Anarchism, on Stitcher and iTunes, and I think other pod posting apps.
Yeah, we all show up in different places. People tell me all the time, like, oh, I hear you here. I'm like, I had no idea we got there. I don't know how that works, but okay, great. As long as you're listening.
Right. Yeah. So, Peaceful Anarchism, check out the show and leave me a review if you like it. Contact me on Facebook, like my page and give me some feedback, because I always love hearing feedback about my episodes. It really, is very encouraging, and that's how I grow and improve. That's how we all grow and improve. We got to hear feedback, whether positive or negative. Although I honestly don't really get that much negative feedback, which is great. A lot of other anarchists, perhaps, who communicate even more, harshly and brazen than I do, do get a lot more negative feedback.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
So yeah, I'm kind of lucky in that sense. I think I have some interesting, fascinating conversations with a wide variety of guests, you know, rappers and authors and people making documentaries and other podcasters, other YouTubers, people who are cryptocurrency experts and unschoolers and homeschoolers and agorists and all types of people, entrepreneurs. So yeah, I try to have a wide variety of guests. Oh, historians too. That's awesome too. So find my stuff and like it and share and let me know what you think. So thanks a lot, Jeremy, for having me on the show. Really appreciate it.
Well, you're quite welcome, my friend. Like I said, it was a lot of fun for me. And yeah, I'll put all that stuff in the show notes. And if you haven't listened or read any of Danilo's stuff, then I would definitely encourage you to check it out. Because even though I pick it on about the audio quality sometimes, the content is always good. And he definitely does have a very diverse list of guests that he talks and, you know, ideas that he talks about, too, through his writing and everything. So and he is one of my favorite people to read as far as his writing style. I've told him that many a time. So, yeah, go check that out. As for me, thank you, everybody, for listening. This has been Abolitionist Abstractions. All of my content can still be found at solpodcast.org because I'm just too lazy to get my own separate website. I may get a separate RSS feed for this one of these days.
So,
nothing will probably change until after I get relocated out of this hellhole and finally leave the DPRNY behind. But once that happens, I will try to take care of all that. But for now, solpodcast.org. And of course, if you are on Steemit, please go check me out there because that's where I'm putting the majority of my content first these days, steemit.com/@abolitionistj. So once again, thank you, everybody, and we'll catch you next time.
Take care.
Love, peace, and voluntary interactions for all.
Bye.
This is Daryl W. Perry, host of Free Talk Live. This November, I'll be running in the world's biggest and most popular marathon, the New York City Marathon, and I've accepted a spot on Team Innocence Project because I'm a passionate supporter of their work. Since 1989, 353 people in the United States have been exonerated by DNA testing, including 38 who pled guilty to crimes they did not commit, and 20 of whom served time on death row. The Innocence Project provided direct representation or critical assistance in 180 of these cases. With your help, the Innocence Project can help even more people who have been wrongly convicted. As part of Team Innocence Project, I am raising awareness about wrongful convictions and raising funds to help free the innocent. I've already paid the race registration fees. However, to secure my spot on Team Innocence Project in the New York City Marathon, I need to raise $3,500 by November 1st. You can support the Innocence Project and help me secure my race entry by going to run.freetalklive.com.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this content and would like to see more of it, please feel free to donate and help me interview other fascinating people. You can do so through Patreon. That's patreon.com/peacefulanarchism to help me out. $1 a show is all I ask. If you feel so inclined to donate more, please feel free. It will only assist me in spreading the message of freedom and volunteerism that much farther and that much more efficiently. You can also donate to my Bitcoin. My Bitcoin address is in the description to my videos as well as on my website, peacefulanarchism.com. And while you're on my site, there's a donate button to donate through PayPal. If you prefer to donate through PayPal, you can do so with that. But Patreon is a little bit easier for content creators, as you can set up a recurring donation if you so desire. Also, while you're on my website, peacefulanarchism.com, please feel free to sign up, enter your email address, sign up for my newsletter, and you'll receive updates every time I post something, a video or an interview. I do not send out any spam. Or you can also follow me on Facebook, under facebook.com/peacefulanarchism or facebook.com/DaniloCuellar3, I believe. DaniloCuellar3. So either one of those methods, if you are able to donate, I would be most appreciative. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you have a magnificent day.